Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's your host, Jared, here with Wes Crochet yet again of InsideUTSA.com.
How's it going today, Jared?
Good. Ready to get into this 56th edition of the Cooler Chronicles podcast.
Man, how time flies.
Just this time last year, we were getting ready to face a pretty promising Oklahoma State team with J.W. Walsh at the helm in the Alamo Dome. It was a good time. Didn't get the win, but...
No, fun. They didn't. And it was an interesting game for UTSA. It kind of gave them some swag a little bit. You know, the first half they got into a big hole down 35-7 at halftime, and then they came back and put up about, I think, 28 points on Oklahoma State or
something like that.
They ended up losing by a couple touchdowns. I think they put up the most points on Oklahoma State as any opponent did all year, if I'm not mistaken.
That sounds right. Yeah.
But it was almost like, hey, you know what? We can hang with these guys. Right. Type moment, and gave this team some confidence moving forward throughout the rest of the season.
Yeah, so I just bought that new Destiny game that's been all over TV, and I was playing it with a couple of UTSA fans last night, and we were talking about the Oklahoma State game, and I was like, man, I just realized that Kenny Bias scored 3 touchdowns against Oklahoma State last year, and he's suspended for this game.
Yeah.
Damn shame.
Then after that game, everyone thought Kenny Bias would be the next big thing.
Yeah, I thought he was going to score like 15 touchdowns this year and just, you know, skate through a badass season.
He kind of just disappeared, and we haven't really heard much from him since. He's suspended for this game and then the next one.
I think...
Because it was a total of 4 games.
Okay.
And so he was out against Houston. That's when the news broke, right before the kickoff on Houston game day. And then he's been out for against Arizona. He'll be out against Oklahoma State. And then he'll be out the following game after that. And then we may see him try to work his way back to the lineup. But UTSA still has a lot of weapons on the outside. They did pretty well last week, although they did lose against Arizona. Mm-hmm. But the one guy who did play better than he did in week one, that most notably, was Tucker Carter.
Yeah, for sure. I was pretty overall pleased with Tucker Carter's performance. And I know there's some message board warriors that are ready to come in the comment section and tell us about the interception that he threw at the end of the game. And, you know, I kind of have the same opinion, attitude about that play that Coker has in his post-game response is, you know, yeah, it was a mistake. It was bad. Learn from it on the film. But those are the type of mistakes that you make when you're forced to go out there and make a play to win the game, when you need to push and be more liberal than you would in your normal attack on offense. So I think, like, when there's, like, 2 minutes left in the game or whatever and you need to make a play to win, that stuff happens. I'm not going to sweat over it. Overall, I think Tucker did a great job leading the offense. Just had the one interception on a kind of a busted play. But he had a high completion rate and thought he took good care of the football, so...
In week one, Tucker threw 24 times and completed 15 passes, and I would say 9 of those, maybe more than half of those incompletions, incompletions he had in week one were pretty bad incompletions, especially earlier on in the game. This week, he looked like a bit of a different player. He looked way more comfortable. He made plays not only with his arms, but with his legs as protection broke down some. He picked up yards, notably to extend drives. Aside from his one mistake that he instantly knew was wrong at the end of the game, he played a good game, and he scored a touchdown through the air. He threw for 228 yards, and passed the ball 33 times. He attempted 33 passes, completed 22 of those passes. He did pretty well. I mean, he had a QB rating of 128. I don't know the exact math on getting those ratings, but the ratings do speak for themselves a little bit. I think overall he did well. And I think he'll continue to play better as the season goes on and he gets more comfortable just being the guy. You know, we got to remember this is his second time to start in, 3 or 4 years? And that says a lot.
Yeah, 3 years, I think it is.
3 years, and that says a lot that he could come in there and give his team a chance to win on the final drive of a game against an Arizona team.
Yeah, a team that's probably going to win at least 8 games, I would guess. Pac-12's pretty strong this year, but I can see that.
And so it was good to see him finally make some of the throws, make some of the plays that we had heard about in the offseason, but we just hadn't seen yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he kind of got over the hump, threw his first touchdown pass finally, because he didn't throw any against Houston. Hit David Morgan there, about, 15 yards out, I would guess.
And what a great weapon to have back. David Morgan, who's been injured,
forever.
Seems like forever.
Right.
And he's finally back, and you see this the difference he makes. He's a big tight end. He's good at receiving. You saw some of the national media during this game saying, hey, whoa, NFL scouts better take notice of David Morgan. I saw that on Twitter. a bit during the game, but he's just that prototypical tight end who is a big guy who can block, but he can also make an impact in the passing game, and he really adds another element to this team. And he's a nice safety blanket for Tucker Carter when he needs it. You saw that against Arizona.
Right, yeah, his skill set is so varied. It's really impressive. I mean, like, he can run, outrun linebackers for the most part. He has amazing hands, can, like, catch with his body contorted behind his back, can bulldoze over safeties when he has the ball and he's running with it. The kid is a crazy good weapon. I think he had 7 catches for, like, 65 yards. Does that sound about right?
Something like that. We'll look up the stats here to be exact. But, you know, he is a great weapon to have, along with the receivers on the outside. But you can't forget about Cole Hubbell, who's still a good tight end as well.
He had a catch as well. Yeah, first time catch.
So,
man, how about that catch that Morgan had on that 4th and, like, 15 or 4th and 12 or something like that?
It seems
through
like,
traffic, just went over everyone and caught the ball.
It seems crazy. Like all game long, he was just trying to find those little pockets in the traffic, settling in those little holes in the traffic and making the catches. He actually had 5 receptions for 76 yards and a touchdown against Arizona.
Solid.
And those are big numbers for a tight end.
Yeah, especially against a team like Arizona that, you know, game plans for the tight end.
And they're a fast defense, so you would think normally they can keep up with some of these tight ends, but he just did a good job of finding the holes in the zones. And, you know, making himself a valuable target for Tucker Carter all game long, and it paid off big time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people say, and totally factual, that UTSA kind of got away from using the tight ends in the passing game last season in 2013. So I really hope that Coker and Coach Brown make an emphasis to get those guys involved in the game, because I think Carter's more that pro-style guy who can hit tight ends because he's a little bit taller than Eric was. So I think they'd be a great weapon if, you know, we can keep feeding those guys the ball and just let them work.
I think there's no doubt that they will use tight ends moving forward consistently. I mean, just this game alone proved how valuable using a tight end in this offense is. And I think for a long time it wasn't a matter that they didn't really want to use a tight end. They just didn't have David Morgan. I mean, you know, Cole Hubbell does a lot of things nicely. Last year, Jeremiah Moeller, he was a good blocking tight end. But none of these tight ends were David Morgan. And David Morgan, again, just adds that he's just a weapon in the receiving game, in the passing game, and he just adds an element to this offense they can really utilize. And I think moving forward, you'd be crazy not to use it. I think the staff will. I think they see how valuable it is using him. And I think we'll see it against Oklahoma State, but even more so in Conference USA, when you can really match him up in some matchups that are going to be advantages towards UTSA. When they get into conference play here.
Yeah, so we don't play Tulane anymore, but I'm sure you remember Tulane had Nico Morley, who was like a 5'9", 200-pound linebacker. I mean, like, that guy's a great player, all-conference nominee, but there's no way he can cover a 6'5", leaping David Morgan. So we're not going to have a matchup that advantageous this season, probably, but he's definitely a guy that's a mismatch problem for most defenses.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he, as you see, he was the leading receiver against Arizona with his 5 receptions and 78 yards, and he was the only scorer through the air as well. The next closest receiver was Aaron Grubb, who was targeted quite a bit by Tucker Carter. I noticed that he was looking for Grubb underneath, and I think one reason he was targeting David Morgan and Grubb underneath is this: he's gaining more confidence. So right now, he may not be looking down the field as much as he should be. Now, there were some plays where he was able to extend those plays, make plays with his feet, kind of in the backfield, and then find some receivers downfield. But again, I think as the season goes on, more receivers will get into action a little bit more, and they'll be used downfield as Tucker Carter continues to settle in. But again, he played well. Mm-hmm. I like what we saw from Tucker Carter in this game. The offensive line did pretty well overall.
Right. Yeah.
There was a few passes, a few plays where it seemed like Carter had forever
and
make plays.
You know, I don't think that the outside receivers did a very good job of just finding space and running to it. I think they kind of stuck to their routes longer than they probably should have, especially when you play a secondary that has this speed to match you down the field. So I think that's why, you know, the downfield receivers and the running backs and tight ends got more passes to them because they were able to branch off their routes and just go into space.
But we knew going into this game, Arizona was a fast defense.
Right,
we knew
absolutely.
That was going to be tough.
Probably the fastest defense UTSA will see all year.
I think so. I think that's fair to say. So I attribute a lot of the issues with getting some plays downfield to just playing a fast defense, and that's just what happens.
Mm-hmm.
It would have helped had UTSA been able to establish more of a ground game for as well as the offensive line did, protecting Carter. And I still think there were some times when the offensive line broke down, but that's to be understood against a team like Arizona.
Right.
But for as well as they did, they struggled really in the ground game. They really weren't able to open up many holes for the ground game. The running backs really aren't, or the entire team only averaged 3.1 yards a carry. The leading rusher, average-wise, was Jarvion Williams, 7 carries for 34 yards, average of 4.9 yards. David Glasgow had a rough day, 12 carries, 35 yards, 2.9 yards a carry. He did get in the end zone one time, but it just wasn't the day that UTSA needed on the ground if they were going to be successful.
Yeah, I don't want to pin this on the running backs because I don't think the running backs did anything wrong. I think it comes back to the offensive line. Whenever you face a three-man front, you should really be able to win those first couple of yards right off the line of scrimmage. And UTSA was not able to consistently do that, which I was surprised by. I thought they'd be able to handle that Arizona defensive line. I thought Nate Leonard really struggled. Leonard is a guy who, if he plays against a four-man front and he has to attack angles and, you know, help out, chip on a defensive tackle, go to the next level and block a linebacker, I think he does a great job of that. But when he's head-to-head with a 305-pound nose tackle, I just don't think Nate has, like, the size and strength to really handle that kind of situation. So I need to go back and see other times where UTSA's faced a three-man front, but I feel like that's just a weakness on this team. And, I mean, we'll see if other teams will try to exploit that later in the season. But for right now, that's just kind of the card that UTSA's been dealt because you have to keep Nate out there. You know, we don't have a viable option at backup center besides Kavanaugh.
Well, it is. I mean, this offensive line, we all know that they're not, many of them aren't even in their ideal positions. You know, for the most part, the tackles are essentially guards playing tackle. Nate is an undersized center. He's played respectably all his career at UTSA. He's definitely, from a mental aspect, one of the leaders of this team.
Absolutely.
But, you know, physically, there's going to be times when they're overmatched. That's just kind of how it is for UTSA right now. This is the way it goes for a startup program. But I think, for the most part, in the past, they have played pretty well. They struggled against Arizona. Moving forward, UTSA is going to have to rely on this offensive line to really establish a ground game because that's the type of offense UTSA's offense is. They have to establish a ground game if they really want to be successful and put up points. There's just not a team yet that can just sling it 40-plus times a game. So I think moving forward, they're going to have to play better, especially this week against Oklahoma State. It's going to be tough. You're playing another big-time athletic defensive line, and they're going to be running stunts. We'll get into that a little bit when we get to Oklahoma State. But focusing on Arizona again, I think the offensive line did struggle to open up some holes. And you just saw the difference in the game versus Arizona's ability to run the ball,
right,
which was they basically ran it at will.
Oh, God. Nick Wilson was incredible. I mean,
Wilson had 30 carries, 174 yards, and a touchdown. That's good for 5.8 yards per carry. And it seemed like every time he touched the ball, he'd run about an extra 3 or 4 or 5 yards after he initially got hit.
I mean, right. And he's not a huge running back either.
No, he's not. But he's very good. He impressed me big time. But also, Arizona's offensive line was playing better than I had expected after seeing UTSA's defensive line play extremely well in Houston against Houston. So on the flip side of the war in the trenches, when we look at UTSA's defensive line, they need to step up and kind of have a bounce-back game if they want to have a chance of being competitive with Oklahoma State and beating Oklahoma State in Stillwater.
Yeah, I thought the defensive line got caught playing poor angles. I noticed that the defensive tackles kind of had their bodies twisted a little bit. Whenever you're a defensive tackle, for the most part, you want to have your shoulders directly parallel with the line of scrimmage and play your guy up front and then shuffle side to side. And from what I saw, it looked like defensive tackles were trying to chase into the gaps, and so they were turning and exposing their body. So whenever you're playing against a zone blocking scheme like Arizona runs, I mean, that's just like, that's what the zone blocking scheme is made to exploit, is defensive tackles that will expose their body like that, and you can just push them out of the hole. So I thought they did a pretty poor job in that sense. I thought the pass rush was pretty solid, I think, for a group of five team playing against a Pac-12 opponent. I think you can't ask for much more pressure than what they put on Anu Solomon. Caused a safety, which was pretty cool. It's always nice to get a safety in front of a roaring student section on national TV. So I was proud of that. But,
They definitely didn't have a bad day.
No.
Had they would have had a bad day, the score would have just been a lopsided affair for Arizona. But it definitely was a bit surprising to see a defensive line that we're used to holding their own in the trenches. They kind of got pushed around a little bit.
Right.
And I noticed on a few plays that Arizona was just doing a great job of sealing the edge. And yeah. So Nick Wilson was able to run right through the tackles, basically, or bounce it out around the tackles to get some tough yards. And I noticed time after again, especially in the first half, the Arizona tackles were really doing a number on mm-hmm. UTSA's defensive ends.
Yeah, I played a defensive end myself in high school, so I'm always watching the defensive ends and watching their technique and what have you. So this is like one of the few games where I really noticed the defensive ends were kind of like giving up their gap assignment on the edge and kind of getting hooked on the outside shoulder. Very rare for this program, but it's pretty disappointing to see. I don't know why it was a problem in this game when it hasn't been for the past 3 years. I guess that speaks to how athletic and long the Arizona offensive line is. But
again, I mean, all around, Arizona is a very athletic team, very fast. But UTSA was able to hang in there, and they did some nice things too. That's why the game came down to the last series. But there's just things to build off of heading into this Oklahoma State game if UTSA wants to get out of there with a win. And one of those things that I kind of talked about today in my piece on InsideUTSA.com was, you know, really controlling the trenches mm-hmm. and really taking those back. And you saw in the Houston game the difference that made. Even when the UTSA offense was struggling, the ability to control the trenches, especially from the defensive point of view, really helped set the tone in that game for UTSA, and they basically dominated that game. And the Arizona game, they weren't able to do that, and it was kind of a back-and-forth battle a little bit. And in the end, Arizona's running game and ground attack was just too strong. Nick Wilson had an amazing day, and UTSA just wasn't able to pull one out in the end in the Alamo Dome.
Yeah, I think how you're saying about controlling the line, I think in today's modern version of 2014 football, which is becoming more and more like basketball on turf, I think if you can control the line of scrimmage, then you can control the tempo of the game. So if UTSA is able to go into Stillwater and just move the defensive line off the line of scrimmage consistently, then they can just ground and pound that team and just eat up clock. So then when Oklahoma State gets the ball, they're going to feel really pressured to score because they're used to working with so much time on the clock and they can run a lot of plays. I think a good example of this was whenever Texas Tech played at UTEP last weekend. I know it was like 1 a.m., so a lot of you guys probably missed the game because it was so late. But UTEP was just mauling Texas Tech's defensive line. They were just running those guys over. And UTEP's excellent running back, Aaron Jones, I think he rushed for like 159 or something like that. They were just able to ground and pound, just run it down Tech's throat. Tech ran, I think, 59 plays on offense when they usually run in the area of like 80 or 90 plays a game, I would venture a guess. So I think it had a pretty big impact on what Tech was able to do on offense because of what happened on the defensive side, because they were not able to have as much time and opportunity to run their offense.
I agree. I mean, if you can go in there and control a line of scrimmage, any team playing any other team, if you can control that team's line of scrimmage, you can control the trenches, you're going to win the game. But in a realistic view, I don't see UTSA going to Stillwater and being able to control the trenches the entire game, especially right. not UTSA's offensive line. The best case scenario you want, though, is for them to hold their own and kind of take it punch for punch, blow for blow, as long as they can have some success. Not necessarily just dominate the entire game, but they're going to need to have a few drives, a few plays where they open up some holes and get UTSA's offense into a shorter second and six or mm-hmm. a third and three or something like that, and more manageable downs instead of just first and 10, get a yard. Now you're in second and nine, you get another yard. And then you're in third and seven, third and eight, and then what do you do?
Right.
If it's going to be like that all game, it's just going to be a long day for UTSA, and I don't think they're going to come out of there with a win, nor do I think they'll be competitive. I mean, I think they'll be punting more often than not, but if they can have some drives where the offensive line can hold their own for a bit and get them in some shorter third downs and shorter second downs, then that's when you'll see a game that can be competitive and the one that UTSA can hang in until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, if UTSA's offensive line dominates Oklahoma State's defensive line, that probably says more about Oklahoma State than it does about UTSA coming from a Big 12 program. But I think you mentioned this in your write-up today, which I read. I think it's really going to come down to the turnovers. Like, I think we know that UTSA has enough talent to at least compete, at least in for four quarters, you know, to compete and hang in there against a team like Oklahoma State. Like, we just saw what they did against Arizona. But I think it's just going to come down to, can UTSA create turnovers after not having any against Arizona? And are they going to be able to protect the ball as well as they have so far this season? So, you know, if UTSA can pull down an interception, get a nice return, get a good field position, man, that can make such a huge difference in a ball game when you're playing against a more talented opponent.
Well, that and taking advantage of opportunities. And that's kind of how I worded it today. And of course, you know, turnovers are nice. But I think taking advantage of those opportunities, and we saw some missed opportunities against Arizona. There was a missed field goal, and that stung in the end. There was a kind of just a blunder of a red zone opportunity. Part of it was play calling. Part of it was execution. I didn't understand when Austin Robinson came in.
Yeah, let's go through this series real quick. Let's hit on that because we didn't mention it earlier. I don't have the drive chart pulled up, but my remembrance of the series is that the first play, I think Tucker handed it off to a running back for a short game. And then they brought in Austin Robinson to run the read option. Everyone in the stands knows what's coming. Everyone on the sideline knows what's coming. Everyone on TV knows what's coming. So it goes nowhere. I think you got no gain on the play. So then you're looking at like 3rd and 8 on 3rd down. And then I think Tucker just kind of threw the ball away because we didn't have anyone open. And then I think that's the same drive where Yano missed that 20-yard field goal. Is that right?
I believe it is.
Yeah.
I believe it is. And I think this happened in
the
fourth quarter, just the beginning of the fourth quarter. And what had happened is UTSA was able to have a nice drive. I believe it started on their own 23, I want to say.
Wow.
And let's see if I can find it. So, yeah, it started on their own 23 after a field goal by Arizona. And so UTSA is down 26-16, and they start on their own 23. And they have a nice drive going all the way. It's play after play. It's about 10-play drive from their own 23. And so they get down to it's 1st and 10 at the Arizona 14. And Tucker Carter completes the pass to Brandon Armstrong for 6 yards. It was a good play. Brandon Armstrong had a great game. I'll talk about him in a minute. But 2nd and 4, and they bring in Austin Robinson. And I understand if Austin had come in maybe around midfield. I think earlier in the game he did come in and have an eight-yard run. But in the red zone, unless it's a play that has consistently worked, I don't know why you bring him in because pretty much everyone knows it's going to be a run play.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a short field. The defense is already up due to the short field. They're already crowding the line, and it goes for no gain. It's basically a wasted play. So then you're in a 3rd and 4. And I think this was a rush play in 3rd and 4. Tucker Carter tried to pass it to Jarvion, but it went incomplete. And then Sean Iano comes on for the field goal at Arizona's 8-yard line. I mean, you're knocking on the door,
right?
And he misses the field goal too. And that whole series just took the life out of that stadium there for a little bit. And it was just a very deflating series. So, again, having opportunities to score, having opportunities to make something out of positive drives or make something out of a turnover. You have to execute. You have to take advantage of these opportunities when they're given to you, especially when you're the underdog playing a team that's just better than you. And that's Arizona was just the better team, but UTSA had some opportunities where they could have beat Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go into Stillwater and they have these opportunities, they're going to have to take advantage of them if they want to be competitive in the fourth quarter and if they want to come out of there with a win.
My thing on the playing Austin Robinson, I'm in favor of it. I think it adds a nice dynamic to the offense, and it keeps the defense on their toes because you never know when he's going to come in. But I think if you're going to put Austin in, you got to have him a package of plays for him. You got to keep him on the field for more than one snap because I think it's too apparent what's going to happen whenever they see number three come out on the field. I mean, it's clear that it's going to be a run play. And, you know, if UTSA wants to sneak and do a play action with Austin Robinson, then fine. But when you come down in the red zone, just bring him in for one play on 2nd down like that, it's just so apparent what's going to happen. It's so easy.
You know, my thing about that is again, if it was a package that had shown success, I completely get it. Let's say the entire game, Arizona's defense looked like UT's defense trying to stop BYU's quarterback. Then I get that. The thing is, he was in the game one time in the first quarter, had an 8-yard run, but this was at UTSA's 38-yard line. So this is when the field is still long, the defense isn't pressing up as much. It's just the situation was just not right for Austin Robinson to come in. It didn't work out. I'm not trying to harp on that play, but the point again is you have to capitalize on opportunities. And if UTSA wants to beat Oklahoma State and wants to keep this game competitive, they have to capitalize on opportunities that are given to them Father and Stillwater in enemy's home field.
All right, so let's start getting into some Oklahoma State talk. Let's get down to the
nitty-gritty. To exactly who they're playing. Biggest news coming into this game is J.W. Walsh is out with a broken foot, probably for the rest of the season. But that is definitely not the end of the world for Oklahoma State. They have a quarterback named Dax Garmon, who played pretty well in Walsh's absence. He's a transfer from Arizona, right?
Yeah, yeah. I assume he would be the starter there if he would have stayed. I don't know.
Yeah, he could have been. I thought I knew Solomon played pretty well in the first half of the game. He kind of struggled later half of the game. But anyway, so Dax Garmon came in, passed the ball for 26 times, completed 16 of those passes, had 244 yards passing, threw two touchdowns, zero interceptions. J.W. Walsh did have an interception on the season. But really, I mean, this offense shouldn't lose that much without J.W. Walsh in there. You know, obviously Walsh is more of the seasoned, experienced quarterback over Dax, but it's not like this offense is going to change from a schematic standpoint.
Right.
It's not like the whole strategy is going to change. It should be pretty much the same offense that we saw last year in the Alamo Dome and when we've seen all season, too.
Yeah, Dax is actually a better passer than Walsh. I think that there's a small advantage to UTSA with Walsh being out because his scrambling ability, I think, is a tough matchup for a slower team like UTSA. But Dax can sling the ball. There's one play against Missouri State, who they played last week, where the pocket kind of collapses and Dax scrambles out to his right-hand side. And he just comes and he sets about midway to the sideline, and he just unfurls a beautiful pass. It was like a deep post route that the Oklahoma State player had ran, and he, like, put it through the smallest window on the run. It was just incredible. And I'm like, man, if that guy can make passes like that against us, we don't have a chance.
I think you're right. I don't think Dax is as good of a runner as J.W. Walsh is, but he can still throw. He's from Southlake, so he's used to the spread system and used to just the spread type of offense that's kind of taken over Texas high school football. So he's definitely a guy who can keep this offense going, and he can spread the ball out to the Oklahoma State weapons. And I think you are right again when you say that this is probably going to help UTSA in some sense because they don't really have to worry about Garmon scrambling as much as they did with Walsh in the backfield. Right.
Yeah, they should be able to drop everyone back into coverage and not have like a spy there. That's not something that UTSA has done a whole lot of, but sometimes they'll keep like Jeters or Kurvish back in the day. They just let him play a little closer to the line and kind of wait to see if the quarterback's going to run off or not. So that's probably not something you have to worry about with Garmon, because he's a pretty slow quarterback. So maybe they'll dial up some more blitz packages and try to get him out of the pocket, because he had a couple of throws against Missouri State where once the pressure came and it collapsed, he didn't look as sure in his mechanics and as smooth. So that's something that UTSA might try to exploit. But overall, I really don't think it's going to make a huge difference in the game, just because Oklahoma State's going from a great quarterback to a pretty solid, damn good one. So,
yeah. Yeah, again, I mean, they still have the weapons on the outside. We know Garmon will be the quarterback. Who is one player that on offense that we should take note of as a weapon that Garmon could be, you know, distributing the ball to?
Oh, my God. You already know who I'm going to say.
Who is it?
No. Tyreek Hill. Larry Coker this week called him the fastest man in college football, and he's got to be right. This guy was running for Oklahoma State's track team, and they convinced him to come out and play football, and it was just a natural fit. The guy's insane. He's 5'10", 185 pounds, and he was like 0.013 seconds slower than Usain Bolt. Yeah.
He's a 5'10 speedster. He's only 5'10", 195 pounds. He's from Pearson, Georgia. He's listed as a junior. But yeah, he's a kind of dude everything, you know, kind of almost like a Percy Harvin type player that he was in college. I mean, this guy he takes handoffs, gets it out of the backfield, gets receptions.
Yeah, for a UTSA comparison, he's like a 5'10" Brandon Armstrong, but, you know, world class sprinter.
He has 7 receptions on the season for 64 yards and then 16 rushing attempts for 106 yards. So he averages 6.6 yards of carry and 9.1 yards of catch. He's going to be a guy you're going to need to take note of the entire game.
Yeah, I watched both games for Oklahoma State so far, and I saw them use Tyreek in a lot of different ways on offense. I saw them use him on just like a fly sweep, lined up as a receiver. I seen him just lined up in the in the pistol back as a running back and just take the handoff. I've seen him being used on jailbreak screens, on bubble screens, not a whole lot of fly routes because I don't think his hands are that great to like make a catch downfield. But any time that the quarterback turned and faced towards towards Tyreek, just the whole defense collapsed on him. So if UTSA is planning on doing that, they better be ready for the pump fake because it's going to come. Because I know that Oklahoma State's seeing the same stuff on film that an amateur like me is seeing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this Oklahoma State offense, you're used to seeing guys like Justin Blackmon out there or Dez Bryant out there, and they really don't have a receiver like that right now.
No.
But they have Tyreek Hill, and he is a guy who can break one, rip one off for, you know, 60, 70, 80 yards at any point in the game. So you know they're going to be creative trying to get him the ball in space, trying to match him up on slower linebackers. I would instantly think of UTSA's linebackers and specifically also their dog, Nick Johnston. You know, this is going to be a group effort, and I don't think you're going to see UTSA's defense try to go one-on-one with Tyreek Hill. You just can't do that. You can't
just
run circles around people. So this has to be a group effort. They're going to have to play with good technique. No more missed, you know, tackles. The very first play of the Arizona game was just a broken coverage, broken tackle, and that's about as bad as it gets, and we saw what that led to, and you just can't have that against Oklahoma State, and you can't do that against Tyreek Hill. I mean, he'll burn you all day if you do that.
Right. So Tyreek is a big weapon on offense for sure, but I think he's going to make his biggest impact in the special teams. I guarantee you that he's going to break open a huge return against UTSA. I guarantee it. He's too fast. UTSA can't match up. If Florida State's arguably the fastest team in all of college football, they're one of the most talented college football teams we've seen in the past decade, and Tyreek Hill made them look like idiots. He was just blazing right past him. So, honestly, if you're a realistic UTSA fan, you should be absolutely terrified of this kid. Maybe he comes out and he doesn't have a good game. Maybe UTSA just scares him physically, pops him in the mouth. But they're going to have their hands full, man. The kid is an insane athlete.
Yeah, he is. This is going to be a fast team. Aside from Tyreek Hill in the passing game, there's also Brandon Shepherd, a 6'1 receiver who leads Oklahoma State in receiving yards and is tied in receptions with David Glidden. Shepherd has 6 receptions on the season, 160 yards and 1 touchdown. Again, David Glidden has 6 receptions, 107 yards, 1 touchdown. Next on the list is Juwan Seals, who has 5 receptions for 80 yards and 1 touchdown. So again, there's not a receiver like a Dez Bryant. There's not a receiver like a Justin Blackmon. And in some cases, in some sense, that's going to be helpful for UTSA's defense.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
There's not going to be that big, huge, physical receiver that can really line up anywhere and kind of take over. You know, there's not a Deontay Greenberry that they're going to have to worry
right.
about. So,
and I think UTSA struggled more with that, with those huge 6'3", big body receivers than they have against the speed guys. I think it's easier to scheme around speed than it is for size. I think for speed, you can try to catch them all on one side of the field and stack it over. But I think if you're going against the bigger size, it's like, well, they're just going to out-jump you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And just getting off the blocks is a lot harder, too, so it affects the run game.
You know, one thing I will be interested to see is last season we saw UTSA playing off the line of scrimmage, the secondary playing off the line of scrimmage a bunch against Oklahoma State, and it hurt because Oklahoma State was easily able to pick up chunks of 5 yards, 7 yards, and they just kind of threw underneath all day until they attacked the deep safeties back there. So I'm very curious to see if UTSA plays up, if they show more confidence in their secondary, show more confidence in their defensive line to get to Dax Garmon before he can make a pass and make a decision. I think that's going to be a very telling of this game, too, is if the defense can show more confidence, if the coaches can show more confidence in the defense, and if they can handle playing up closer, then this will be a different game than what we saw last year. Because a big reason why UTSA struggled was just their secondary just wasn't where they are now.
Oh,
they
absolutely.
Just weren't a complete unit. And now they're playing more as a complete unit. You're seeing more corners step up. You're seeing a guy like Darian Starling be listed as a starter because he's played better. You just have more depth back there. You have more continuity. And I think if they can play up and kind of show that they're not going to back down, I think it will be a different game and a different outcome this season. This season in Stillwater. I expect it to be a close game.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Oklahoma State's going to score a late touchdown that makes the score look like Oklahoma State dominated more than they actually did. But I think, like, throughout the game, it's going to be fairly competitive. But like you were saying with like the coverage. I remember last year there was one series where I think UTSA scored two or three touchdowns in a row, and it's like, hey, like we could do this. Like it's getting a little close. Like kind of waking up from my slumber here. And then there was one series where I think four plays in a row, like I think Starling screwed up in his coverage. He like tripped or had a penalty or something, and then Andre Brown screwed up the next play after that. Tristan Wade missed a tackle, and then Andre Brown screwed up again and touchdown, and they marched like 60 yards in four plays.
I remember this game where the secondary just kept looking at one another.
Yeah, they're confused. Like, that was your guy. And that was your guy.
The secondary is just night and day where they were at that point in the season to where they are now, and they've really taken their gameplay to the next level. So hopefully they learn from their mistakes from the very first game of very first play of last game against Arizona when they blew their coverage, and hopefully they'll learn from last season too. I expect them to play better as a unit. One interesting stat regarding Oklahoma State is this: their run game. And it's just not as strong as I guess I had thought going into the season. Their leading rusher as far as carries is Rennie Childs. He has 22 carries for 86 yards, only averages 3.9 yards a carry. Again, he has played Florida State, so you know that's a very good defense.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. He does have two touchdowns on the season. So there's Rennie Childs. There's also Desmond Rowland, 12 carries on the year for 28 yards, good for 2.3 yards a carry. Maybe we'll see more of Raymond Taylor, who has 5 carries for 39 yards. That's good for 7.8 yards per carry. I think that this is something that UTSA can really utilize because they have a good defensive line. We know that.
Right.
Yes, they did struggle a little bit with Arizona and Nick Wilson, but I think that they can have a bounce-back week. They'll play better. They have a lot of depth on the defensive line. So if you can almost take that part out of the game, out of Oklahoma State's offense, that then helps you really focus more on the passing game.
Yeah, especially when you don't have to worry about the quarterback tucking the ball and running. I don't think that's going to be much of an issue this week.
Yeah, if you're not having to use linebackers and those second-level players to maybe spy on a quarterback or to really help stopping the run, then you can use those players to drop into coverage and plug up some more holes in the secondary if you're playing zone or man or whatever it may be. And that was really helps with the underneath routes, you know, getting there quickly or even getting there before to cover those passes. So I think stopping the run, again, even though this is a spread team that moves fast, stopping the run is going to be important again. Because the last thing you want is to see running backs for Oklahoma State having field days, and then you got to worry about stopping the run, and then you got to worry about dropping into coverage, and then you got to worry about play action, and then I don't care who you're playing.
I don't care what kind of gimmicky, fast-paced spread offense they run. You can't let a team run on you. You can't let a team run for more than 4 yards a carry.
You saw it with Houston. The way that the defensive line was able to corral Ryan Jackson and really just...
First play of the game, Avery bounces through the whole line and gets a loss of three. It just set the tone.
There was no threat for Houston to run that entire game until the very end when it was over. And that really was a telling part of the game because it really slowed down that Houston offense. It made them just be almost like a one-sided offense where they had to rely on throwing. And then by that point, UTSA secondary was playing better. And so I think if they can make an impact again, it comes back to the trenches. If they can make an impact in the trenches, especially with this defensive line, UTSA's defensive line making an impact in the trenches, they will be in this game till the very end, and they'll have a chance to win it.
Yeah, I would like to see them use Jeters more on blitzing this game, because I think that's something that he is excellent at. If you look back at his college highlight film, he had a lot of sacks and a lot of quarterback hits when he was like coming off the edge on blitzes. So I think that's something that should open up this game. I mean, they might want to save it for conference play, and I'm cool with that. I understand. But, you know, if I was in charge, that's probably something that I would dial up. So
let's get
in. Fun to watch.
Let's run down just some notable players going into this game. Obviously, we know Tucker Carter's going to need to play at the same level he did against Arizona, if not a little bit better.
Yeah.
They're going to need him to make some throws. They're going to need him to make some throws downfield. Sure. He's probably going to have to get creative again, make some plays with his legs. We know Oklahoma State does have a pretty athletic defensive line, especially with their pass rush.
Yeah,
there's one defensive end you were talking about.
Yeah, I'm super high on. Did I tell you he was a sophomore or junior? Sophomore.
Sophomore, I believe.
Yeah, true sophomore Emmanuel Ogba. I believe he's number 92, 82, something like that. The guy's like 6'2", 270, and he's just super quick, super athletic. Oklahoma State lines him up all over the defensive line. We were just looking at a play against Florida State where he lined up as a defensive tackle. And he's 270 pounds. You know, he can do that. He can hold his own inside. And they had him stunt outside to the C-gap, and he just came around the back end and got Jameis Winston for a loss of, like, 10 yards. So he has, like, next-level speed that's going to be hard for UTSA to deal with, especially his size.
You know, and again, that's where I'm kind of talking about the offensive line playing well. Is you're going to need Nate Leonard to recognize when the defensive line is lined up like that. You're going to need him to call out to the offensive line, hey, yeah,
and
this is a stunt.
That's okay, because that's one of his strengths. It's just the physical aspect of the one-to-one head-on-head blocking where he struggles.
You know, but again, if he can recognize that, that's going to help them with that play as well. If Tucker Carter can recognize that, you know, we talk about Tucker Carter making throws, but another side of his game is really recognizing what the defense is going to do before the snap. And so you want to see him continue to improve on that aspect. He does a pretty good job with it so far, but we've only seen two games.
Right.
So we haven't seen a ton of that.
Yeah, Carter seems like he's been pretty vocal per snap, which is impressive. I mean, considering the two solid opponents that UTSA has played and, you know, the conditions they've played in.
So, again, Tucker Carter is one of the notable players you're going to need to watch out for, and hopefully he has a good game. You want to see Cam Jones be a factor in the offense. He's been a factor pretty much this whole season. You want to continue to see him be utilized as best as he can. He really provides a spark to the offense in the running game and the passing game, even on special teams. I want to see more Jarvion Williams. I feel like the more I see him, there's certain plays where he just seems like he's about to break one, and he's close to breaking a big runoff. Once he finally settles down as far as getting the speed of the game and understanding what cuts to make and his vision catching up to his what he can do athletically, he'll be a great player.
Yeah,
Coach Coker already talks about that. He talks about him being a great player down the line and being a good player now. I want to see more of Jarvion Williams too.
Yeah, he has that gunpowder quality to him where, like, you just feel like he's about to explode at any time. He's just so electrifying and fun to watch when he has the ball in his hand. So, you know, I feel like he's going to have a breakout game at some point where he rushes for 3 touchdowns and he just bullies on, like, a defense that can't catch up to him. Hasn't happened yet. I think it will. Don't know if it's going to happen against Oklahoma State. We might get close to it. But just keep feeding him, man. Like, he's going to pop off at some point, you know? Mm-hmm.
So we already talked about David Morgan being another factor, and hopefully this game, again, you can utilize him because you're going to need him this game. There's going to be times when Tucker Carter will have to check down, whether it be by pressure, whether it be by coverage. He will need to check down to someone, and David Morgan proved to be a very reliable option for that, and we all expected him to be that. So we'll need to see a big game out of him again. One person that I want to see step up and see if we can get more out of is Brandon Freeman. And
yeah, I agree.
In the offseason, we heard a lot about Brandon Freeman making some great plays, running some good routes. He was suspended the first game, played last game, didn't see much of him, only had 2 receptions for 10 yards. But I really want to see if he can be that guy outside with the receivers who is someone that Tucker can rely on. Because this offense, you know, they don't have a go-to receiver. I mean, if you take David Morgan out of it, who I think right now is the go-to receiver, you take Cam Jones out of it, who is one of the more reliable players, they don't have a go-to receiver on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see a guy like Brandon Freeman step up, or you know, a guy like
Kerry Thomas.
But he, you know, he's still kind of young. They're still kind of working him in. So I think right now Brandon Freeman is that guy. So we'll see if he can kind of make a name for himself on the outside. You still don't have Kenny Bias, as we were talking about. He brings a lot of speed to the outside, but you don't have him for this game or the next game. So I think Brandon Freeman's another guy to watch out for moving forward.
Yeah, I hope that Carter's comfort level with Freeman is high, because I feel like they're a good match, because Freeman is such a great route runner. And Carter seems to really favor his primary receiver a lot. And then he'll progress through his checkdowns, but he doesn't seem like the type of quarterback that's, like, watching all routes yet. Hopefully he'll get there as he starts more games. It's a lot to ask for a guy starting for his third game, you know.
Sorry about that. We lost our recording. Carter and I kind of still going with the recording pause.
Phases,
but as we were saying, we're winding down, talking about Oklahoma State, UTSA, Aaron Grubb, notable players that
looking for Marcellus
Mack up this week.
Let's
move to the defensive side of the ball. He was looking for
who on defense.
Hopefully,
you see
Tucker kind of settle in.
I want to see any of the players at the Rover safety spot really step up.
I understand at the same time. You know, again, this is
Sanchez struggled quite a bit against Arizona.
Those guys that he can go to when the pressure's there.
I think that it was Brian King that missed that tackle on the first play of the game. Not certain. Could have been Wade. Not sure. But I just want one of those guys to really step up and play well. That position's never been a strength for UTSA outside of whenever Cody Berry was healthy. So I just wanted those guys to step up, lead the team at that position, and just become the guy, you know? That's the soft spot in the secondary right now.
I want to see, along with the secondary, I want to see the corners step up. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot about Benito Cacha, you know, having the athleticism to really be a good player for this team. We've heard how Crosby Adams has really stepped up, although in the second half of last against Arizona, we didn't see much of him. It looked due to injury or due to him making some poor decisions on the field. Darian Starley came on and played the rest of the game. But I want to see the corner step up because this is a unit who has made a name for themselves a little bit, especially towards the end of last season. So I want to see guys like Benito Cacha play better. I want to see guys like Andre Brown make some plays. I want Darian Starling to get out there and continue to make plays. You know, I want to see what Crosby Adams can do. Especially against a team like Oklahoma State, you're going to need these corners to play well if they want to have a chance, because these receivers, you know, they got their route running down to a T.
Mm-hmm.
The Oklahoma State receivers, again, they don't have a Dez Bryant or Justin Blackman, but they're still good. They're still solid receivers. They're going to be trying to confuse this defense in the secondary. So I want to see the corners, and like you were saying, the safeties play disciplined defense, play smart, and just have a better showing than they did last year against Oklahoma State.
Man, I can't believe you're ripping on Benito Cacha, man. I think he's been so solid this year.
He has been solid. I don't want to take anything away from him. But I'm ready for him to be, you know, the guy on defense, kind of like Tristan Wade is.
Yeah.
We all expect Tristan Wade to be the superstar on defense.
Well, I don't think they're throwing at Bennett enough for him to
and
be that
And that might
guy.
Be the case, too.
Right. I mean, just look at how the defense lines up. Like, every single time Tristan Wade is shaded over to the side that Starling or Crosby's on. Every single time. Bennett is just kept on an island against Deontay Greenberry, who had some catches, for sure, but mostly wrangled him in. And then against Arizona, he saw Griffey the Jr., Griffey the Third, whatever, and Austin Hill. And, I mean, those guys had pedestrian games. I mean,
yeah, no, that's a very good point.
I think
Bennett's
been
probably
terrific.
Avoiding him, too.
Yeah.
And so yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe I'm just kind of waiting to see him make some huge interception like he did against Houston or something like that. But I just want to continue to see the secondary playing well. And I think that they can definitely have a better showing against Oklahoma State this time around than they did last year.
If you take away that 85-yard touchdown on the first play of the game, I thought the secondary statistically played pretty well. I think that there were some open receivers that Solomon missed or overthrew. But if you take out that 85-yard pass, I mean, I think the receivers only went for like... probably like 75, 80 yards or something like that.
Yeah, and that's true. And it was a good showing. No question, UTSA played better against Arizona this year than they did last year.
Oh, yeah,
by far. You know, and even though it was a loss.
They should have won the game, really.
Even though it was a loss, UTSA is really starting to get the national recognition and national respect that they should have been at the end of last season. But it's good that it's finally here. The Houston game really helped, and then people did see that this team is for real against an Arizona team that many thought was a pretty good Arizona team. Though it was a loss, they put up a fight, had a chance to win it at the end. So this is now another opportunity on a national stage for UTSA to play a known team nationally and really hold their own to gain even more respect amongst the national media.
Yeah, the internet's actually become a pretty big fan of UTSA.
And, you know, and why not? Because they're
a fun team.
They're basically
know?
Seen as, you know, the little team that could. You know, everyone's calling them the little team, and
they literally are the Roadrunner from Looney Tunes. I mean, they're just setting up these traps and watching the coyote run into it, and they're just a lot of fun. You know, you never know what they're going to do next.
It's the fun Cinderella story. Having Larry Coker as a coach is awesome, because many still, you know, really love Larry Coker from when he was at Miami. Even if you weren't a Miami fan, you love the story of Larry Coker and what he did there. I mean, this is just that little team out of San Antonio that's making waves. It's the Cinderella story. But then I think more people are realizing this team isn't a young team.
No.
They're seasoned veterans.
Yeah.
And they have something to prove, and they're ready to go out there and prove it. And they so far they've done just what they've needed to this first two games of the season. You know, they beat a Houston team that many thought they weren't going to beat. And then they hung tough with an Arizona team. And now they have another chance to go into Stillwater, Oklahoma, play a Big 12 Oklahoma State team, and at least keep it competitive, if not, walk away out there with a win.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a fun game. I think in the San Antonio area and Austin area, the game will be televised on Fox Sports Southwest.
I believe so.
And then nationally, I'm not really too sure. But it will be played in Stillwater, which makes the game even more tough when you're playing on the road, especially in an environment like that. Stillwater isn't an easy place to play. Game is at 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you're there for that. I know Jared and I will be tweeting throughout the game. You can follow me at Inside UTSA West C. Follow Jared at
CC underscore Jared.
So check out the websites, coolerchronicles.com and insideutsa.com. Again, sorry for that late glitch there, but we'll have that fixed.
Oh, yeah. No one will even know, man. I'm good at this editing gig. I got this under control. So I'll actually be in Stillwater, so we'll see how much I'll be able to tweet depending on cell phone reception. But, so
you know what? Moving forward, Jared, what we need to do, we need to figure out a way to take calls on these podcasts because I miss Boss Man Don calling in to the podcast last season.
I can take calls, man. Just let me know.
Next time, we got to link up with him. So I think it's about time for Don to get on this podcast.
Yeah,
give us his boss.
Spit some truth.
Give us the boss's breakdown because I missed that as well this season.
Yeah. Well, we're going to wrap this up because UNT and Louisiana Tech are about to play a big-time Conference USA showdown that I'm going to illegally stream.
And BYU Houston's coming up.
Yeah, BYU Houston's at 8 o'clock, and UNT and La Tech is at 7 in a couple minutes.
And don't forget, the NFL does have a game tonight as well. Pittsburgh and Baltimore. You got any players playing? I got Le'Veon Bell.
I don't do fantasy, man. I don't even do NFL.
Don't do fantasy football.
No.
Oh, my God.
God, dude, all these people in the office, they don't talk about sports ever. And now they come in like the first day after football starts. Oh, fantasy football. I hate it, man.
I love it. It was what makes NFL fun. But thanks for listening. Awesome. I guess
so
we'll be back.
So who are you going to take? First of all, who you got? UNT versus Louisiana Tech. Who are you taking?
I'm going to take Louisiana Tech. They're going to surprise. Ooh, they're going to win by 10 points.
Woo!
It's going to be a surprising game. I don't know why. I'm feeling a weird upset.
No, I'm with you on that. I'm going to take Louisiana Tech by about 4 or 5 points, something like that. And I think Louisiana Tech wins it like fourth quarter with a nice touchdown drive from Cody Sickle. Now, the big question is prediction for Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State. I think it will be a competitive game. I think UTSA has earned the right for us to say that they can't hang with teams like Oklahoma State that hung with Arizona. I think Oklahoma State wins by about 10 points. I just think the system that Oklahoma State runs is a good one, and they've been doing this for a long time. It's going to be tough still for UTSA for the defense to slow down the offense. For UTSA to win, basically everything has to go right, and I still am not confident enough in UTSA's offense to say that they can hang with a team like Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it comes down to. If the running game had proven better against Arizona, I'd be saying differently. But I'm just not ready to go there yet and say that UTSA can go into a place like Stillwater and beat a team like Oklahoma State, who hung with Florida State in week one. So I think it'll be a competitive game. But I do think in the end, Oklahoma State wins by about 10 points.
Mm-hmm. The way I see it is that I've seen two different Oklahoma State teams play this year. Whenever they played against Florida State in week one, I saw a team that could compete for a Big 12 championship. And then when I watched them play against Missouri State, I saw them, like, awful. Like, definitely a team that UTSA could beat. So I don't know if either of those two teams are going to show up in Stillwater on Saturday, but I think we're probably going to get something in the middle. And I think that something in the middle is going to be good enough to beat UTSA by, like, 15 points.
And the fact that they struggled against Missouri State to a certain degree probably does not favor UTSA.
True.
Because it's going to light a fire under Oklahoma State's ass.
For sure.
And definitely under Gundy's ass. And it's going to really make them play tough. And they know that UTSA plays tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're familiar with this team. So.
Well, yeah, I read quotes from them that said that UTSA was the most physical, aggressive team they played all of last year. So
we'll see. Well, no. Again, it's 6 o'clock Central Time on Fox Sports Southwest here in the Central Texas area as UTSA takes on Oklahoma State Saturday night in a prime time national stage. Look at that.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week to discuss the game. Thank you for listening. Again, you can go on to Cooler Chronicles to find the link to this podcast. We'll link it again also on Inside UTSA to some degree, or at least tell you where you can go find it. But we'll be back next week to talk about this UTSA Oklahoma State game. Jared,
yes, sir.
It's been fun.
It has been fun.
All right, sir. We'll talk to y'all guys later. Thank you.
All right, take it easy.